Welcome to another UCTV.tv podcast presented by University of California Television.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Westwood for UCLA Bruin Talk. I'm Dave Marcus, very pleased to introduce our new co-host, Allison Taylor. If you've seen UCLA Gymnastics, you're very familiar with Allison. Allison, welcome to Bruin Talk.
Thank you. Before we meet our first guest, let's take a look at the upcoming events.
And welcome again to UCLA Bruin Talk. We've got a very interesting show for you today. We're going to talk about the lifeblood of Division I college athletics, and then we're going to talk with one of the teams who are getting ready to start their season. First, let's meet our first guest. He's the director of the Wooden Athletic Fund at UCLA, Todd Bannister. Todd, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity.
We throw the phrase around all the time. Please explain to us, what is the Wooden Athletic Fund?
Basically, you touched on it, Dave. The Wooden Athletic Fund is the lifeblood of UCLA athletics. The Wooden Athletic Fund, annual dollars that we generate, go directly in support of student athletes. And we have nearly 700 student athletes that compete here at UCLA. We have millions of dollars in scholarships that we need to make sure that we meet. We have academic support that we need to provide for our student athlete. And so all of the dollars that are earmarked specifically for the Wooden Athletic Fund go in support of those student athletes and their endeavors at UCLA.
We use the term Wooden Athletic Fund, and it, of course, harkens back to Nell and John Wooden. And it was very important to Coach and his wife about supporting the athletes at UCLA.
Well, I think that the key mark to the Wooden Athletic Fund is the fact that the family decided that this was important enough. Nell and John decided that this mission of providing support for student athletes was important enough for them to endorse and for them to put their name to. And I think that that speaks volume for not only former basketball players that played at UCLA, but all student athletes who had the opportunity to experience Westwood and what it was like to play in the Pac-10, now Pac-12. And I think that by them endorsing this particular product, this enterprise, I think that's extremely important in moving our mission forward.
On top of providing financial support for tuition, how does the Wooden Athletic Fund aid student athletes directly on an individual level?
You know, that's a great question, Allison. And the fact that when you look at the total experience of the student athlete, we can put a hard dollar cost in terms of just the tuition, books, room and board. And it's going to be in the neighborhood of $27,000 next year for in-state student athletes. Out-of-state student athlete, that number is going to be closer to $49,000. So what happens is that we have the responsibility to campus to meet an approximate $11 million scholarship bill next year. We also will provide nearly $500,000 in student-athlete support in terms of tutorials assistance, academic support, and all of those things that go into the total experience. But when you look at the bigger picture, you're talking about travel. You're talking about time away from class. You're talking about team meals. You're talking about strength and conditioning. You're talking about sports medicine. The entire enterprise of one student athlete with an in-state scholarship is probably in the neighborhood of $50,000. Now, you multiply that out by the fact that you've got 700 student athletes, and you can see the enormous costs that is encumbered by this enterprise of intercollegiate athletics.
Well, I think it's very important that people realize that although the University of California is a state institution, the general fund is not contributing to the athletic program.
Exactly, and that's very important, as we want to make sure that we're self-sufficient, that we're self-sustaining, that we are able to generate our own revenue through not only donations, but ticket sales and just straight philanthropy and things that are going into the enterprise that we will not need assistance from the central campus. And that's so important, is that we want to be responsible, we want to be fiscally responsible, but I think that we owe it to our donors to put a product on the floor and on the fields that is competitive, that we can go to Texas, that we can go to these places throughout the country that have larger operating budgets and be able to compete with them for national championships annually.
Todd, your journey to become the director of the Wooden Athletic Fund, a very unconventional one. You were an assistant men's and women's basketball coach at Pacific, a professor of engineering. I know you've done some time broadcasting. Tell us about the path that got you to Westwood.
Kind of an unusual story. I got a break back when I was 29 years old as being an assistant basketball coach at the University of the Pacific, and I did that for a number of years, and I worked for a man by the name of Bob Thomason, who is currently the basketball coach at UOP. He's been there 22 years. And I'll never forget the day. I've got a picture in my office, actually, and it's the day that we beat UNLV, and they were ranked 10th in the country. And it was the first sellout in the Spano Center, and the crowd stormed the floor, and we were walking in the tunnel back to the locker room after the game, and I looked at my my other assistant coach, and I said to him, is this as happy as I'm ever going to be in regards to coaching basketball? And he looked at me and goes, what do you mean? I said, all I'm thinking about is Saturday night trying to beat New Mexico State, who's coming into the Spano Center. I said, and I knew at that moment that I would never coach again the rest of my life. I coached one more year, and I said, okay, that's enough of this. And I actually have that picture on my wall, and it's not going anywhere. So anytime I ever think about coaching and dabbling again, I just look at that picture and go, no, I don't want to go back there again. And then I was fortunate enough to work in the School of Engineering at the University of the Pacific for a number of years, and I worked as director of their cooperative education program, and it was my job to basically teach them about professionalism and how to get ready for interviews and all of those types of things. And then at Pacific, there was the opportunity to have an internship in the summer, and it was my job to match up companies with our students in order to find summer internships for them. From there, I got an opportunity. There was an athletic administration position that opened at Pacific. I did that, and then a job opened at Cal, and I went to Cal for 3 years, and then from Cal down here to UCLA, and I've just loved every minute of it.
As you mentioned, you worked at our UC rival Cal. What similarities and what differences can you tell us between the two universities?
Well, the differences are easy. It's the weather. There's no doubt about it. When you wake up in June and July in the Bay Area and you're covered in fog and overcast weather and the low 50s, it's miserable. But I think that the one thing that the UCs teach every single employee is how to work within a bureaucracy, how to build consensus, and how to bring people from all walks of life together in order to make decisions. And I think that you learn patience. I really don't look at the differences per se, but I try to look at the similarities, and I see the fact that they are both outstanding academic institutions. It takes a real student athlete to get into, qualify, and play at Cal or UCLA. And the fact that you have people that genuinely care about them, and you have a loyal, passionate fan base. I think that the donor, the profile donor in Berkeley is very similar to the donor profile in Westwood. You have an educated population, people that demand perfection, and that they feel this as being something that they're making an investment in. Not only a financial investment, but an emotional investment, in that the person who is a donor to UCLA is more than just a fan. Because fans are going to go out and buy tickets, and we appreciate every single ticket that we sell. But that guy that makes the $100 contribution, the $5,000 contribution, the $10,000 contribution, they are more invested, I believe, than the other population of folks that just buy the season ticket. And because of that, I think it is our responsibility to do everything we can to put a product on the floor or in the fields that they are proud of. And not only winning basketball games, winning football games, winning gymnastics meets, but also having good student athletes, people that are representative of the University of California at Los Angeles.
There's been a lot of talk, obviously, about the Pauley Pavilion renovation, and there have been campaigns to raise funds for that. But the Wooden Athletic Fund doesn't contribute to contractors. It's contributing to student athletes. Tell us the distinction.
Exactly. And I think that this is important for people to understand. Was when they make a contribution to the Wooden Athletic Fund, that dollar, that $100, whatever it is, goes directly to impact the experience that that student athlete has while they're at UCLA. Academic support, the travel costs, everything else that's encumbered by that student athlete's experience is taken care of by a contribution to the Wooden Athletic Fund. If you make a contribution to the Campaign of Champions, to Pauley Pavilion, you are making an investment into the project. You are literally putting bricks and mortar in the ground, redoing Pauley Pavilion, and those dollars have no impact on the student athletes other than providing a better venue for them to participate in, whether they're in gymnastics or their volleyball or their basketball or whatever the case may be. The venue will be improved, but those dollars that are going to renovate that building have no impact in terms of the experience that the student athlete has while they're here at UCLA.
So that's the hardware. You're dealing with the software.
Exactly. That's a good way to look at it.
So how do the donations to the fund help preserve UCLA's winning tradition?
Well, I think what's important is the fact that when we get into this, we want to have a fair fight. For example, we would hate to tell John Savage that you no longer have 11.7 scholarships to compete with because we're not raising enough money. You now have 5 scholarships to compete with, and you have to go beat Stanford, and you have to beat Arizona and Arizona State. It's not giving Coach Savage an opportunity to have the resources that he needs to put the team on the field that is truly representative of UCLA and has the ability to compete for a national championship. So by getting revenue into the Wooden Athletic Fund, it's going to allow all of our coaches to have the full allotment of scholarship opportunities that they have for their particular teams, which is important. And I think that that's all anybody wants is a fair fight. I mean, can you imagine Coach Val going in knowing that she only had 2 scholarships to give to her potential gymnast for the following year?
No, we would have that problem.
Yeah, and that's why the revenue stream that we generate from the Wooden Athletic Fund is so important.
With your experience at Pacific and at Cal, and I think at Cal is a prime example, Bearbackers was nothing. Cal was really a doormat for years, and the Bearbackers organization grew out of a very small core into a pretty big fundraising effort. Yeah. They've got it together up there. What experiences do you take from your time up there that we can bring to UCLA?
It was great. We had a donor base my last year of over 8,000. We had a very large donor base, and we had an identity. It was the Bearbackers, and folks that contributed were a Bearbacker. I think it's our job to take the Wooden Athletic Fund and give us an identity. Who are we? If I give $100, $1,000, $5,000 to the Wooden Athletic Fund, what do I become? And I think that once we get that identity branded, we know that we're all UCLA. We know we're all fans and passionate people, but we want to make sure that we have some sort of identity to get to. And the quicker that we can do that, I think the more people will feel a connectivity to the campus, to our student athletes, and be more willing and able to participate in what it is that we're trying to do.
One thing that's going to be new is a dedicated website.
Oh, we're really excited about this. At the end of August, we're going to have woodenathleticfund.com. Now, don't forget, woodenathleticfund.com. And it's going to be a website that is going to be void of advertising. So it is going to be more donor-centric, more fan-centric in terms of we are going to be able to tell the story of the UCLA student athletes past, current, and to be, and also of our donors. I think it's important for folks to look at each other and have, you know, one of our donors, whoever it might be, tell the story of why they feel so compelled to contribute to the Wooden Athletic Fund, because we are not naive. We understand that there are hundreds upon thousands of charities that folks can give their money to. There's thousands of enterprises that people can become involved with. But why is it that the Wooden Athletic Fund, and in particular our student athletes, are so important that we are able to pull this these folks in and have them participate in this particular endeavor?
And what benefits do people get for contributing to the Wooden Athletic
Fund? Well, the obvious ones are tickets and parking. I mean, that's what everybody wants to know is where are my seats and where is my parking going to be? But I think that there is other things, too, and it depends upon the donor level, obviously. You're going to get a more personal communication piece from us, the e-newsletters, the invitations to events, press box opportunities, pre- and post-game opportunities to have, you know, come to the tent, come to areas that we have. So there's a number of things that folks can become involved with. And it's just a matter of we actually have a benefit chart, and we tell you, like, if you give $100, these are the benefits you get. If you give, you know, $1,000, these are the benefits you give. And so it's pretty self-explanatory, and that's on the website, the current website of UCLABruins.com, but it will also be on WoodenAthleticFund.com.
Todd, it's a great message. We can't thank you enough for joining us.
Oh, I really appreciate the opportunity.
And we'll be back with more UCLA Bruin Talk after this brief public service announcement.
A trophy can be made just about anywhere. But there's one place where champions are made. UCLA, champions meet here.
It's time now to honor our student athlete of the week, Patrick Cantlay from men's golf. This week, we honor Patrick Cantlay for his summer of never-ending success. Cantlay was recently honored with the title of SGA National Amateur for the month of June as a result of his outstanding performance in professional golf tours earlier in the summer. Cantlay posted a round of 60 in the Tour Travelers Championships, not only the lowest score ever by an amateur in a PGA event, but making the young golfer an early leader in the PGA. Cantlay cinched the SCGA Amateur Championship on July 10th. Most recently, the soon-to-be sophomore tied for 9th at the RBC Canadian Open, making his 4th PGA Tour cut. Congratulations, Patrick, for the amateur honors. Keep up the phenomenal performances, and we wish you the best of luck in your upcoming PGA play.
And if you'd like more information about UCLA Athletics, please visit the Bruins website at uclabruins.com. One of the great things about this time of year is that the new sports calendar is rolling around. It's going to get underway very quickly. And one of the first squads to get in action is going to be the men's water polo team. They begin on September 3rd with the UCLA Invitational. We're pleased to welcome to Westwood and to Bruin Talk, Daniel Lason, the newest assistant coach at UCLA. Welcome to Westwood.
Thank you.
You have joined the Bruins team. I know you were here since February when you were announced. As you're getting ready for the season, tell us about the last-second training that goes on during the summer.
Well, the season is pretty grueling, so we try not to overdo it in the summer. We're having our preseason training that will start in August.
Daniel, you had a chance to see the Bruins last year, a squad that went 19-6. What are your expectations for this season?
We have the highest expectations, always. Our expectations are to be in the national championship game in the beginning of December at Cal Berkeley, and we are working with that in mind, and we have been working with that in mind.
You've got tremendous credentials both as an athlete and in coaching. You had a great career in the pool across town at USC, and then national team coaching experience, the Rose Bowl Water Polo Club. How'd you get to UCLA?
Well, I had the pleasure of kind of lucking into this job on the national team, and Adam, of course, is a player. Adam Wright, the head coach, is a player on the national team, and so my relationship with Adam started then, and I was very impressed with his work ethic and his dedication and love for the sport and his passion for the game, and just when this opportunity came, I couldn't turn it down. It's a special place to be, and I have a lot of respect for Adam, so I'm happy to work with him.
So far, what is your favorite part about being a Bruin?
Well, my favorite part is always the player-coach relationships. And so it's been a great pleasure getting to know the team and beginning these all-important relationships with the players, you know, that really mean everything about coaching.
You've got a very young squad, only 3 seniors. What kind of challenge does that pose?
Well, with any young team, there's always the struggle for consistency, you know, throughout the season. And they've had some very difficult moments, and the water polo season is so difficult. I think it's probably one of the most difficult to qualify for the NC2A championship because only 2 teams from our conference will make it, and it's a dogfight all year, and there's really no moment at which you can let down and drop a game here or there because it can affect all the end of the season. And so, you know, we need to be consistent from the beginning until the end, but because we're young, we are very energetic, and we're putting a lot of work in, and we really have a lot of potential for something great this season.
You mentioned that the water polo season is very long, and it's very grueling. How do you structure your summer program so that to ensure that the athletes are healthy come fall when you're talking about the longer workouts?
Well, in some ways, there's nothing you can do. A water polo is a contact sport. People get banged up during the training, and there's no avoiding full contact during workout. What we can try to do is just maintain our fitness level and stay strong in the weight room and make sure that we are consistent with our training so that there's no real highs and lows and a lot of time off, sometimes coming back from time off. There's a potential for injury. Mainly the consistency through the training, maintaining the fitness level and all of this stuff helps. But then sometimes, you know, there's nothing you can do.
Daniel, you were an athlete who swam at the old rec center pool as a visiting player here, and now the Bruins have a wonderful home at the Speaker Aquatic Center. Tell us about the great facility that you get to work in.
Yeah, well, Sunset Rec is a beautiful place, and it provided a little bit of more of a home court advantage because it was narrow at one end, and it was always a challenge to come and play. This bottom was a little bit shallow, too. But this new pool is incredible. Training and working there is really a pleasure, and I just look around and say, man, this is really nice during the workouts. You know, not very often because I'm focused on the training, but sometimes I just look around and say, this is a really, really nice place, and it's a great home facility, and it provides a really energetic atmosphere, especially for home games that take place at night. I mean, I was here watching games, and people were all up in the parking structure and everywhere, and it was really, really neat. So we're looking forward to that. It's a great pool.
As you look forward to the upcoming season, let's talk a little bit about how you got into coaching. A lot of times athletes don't transition into coaching. When did you know you wanted to make coaching a part of your life?
Well, both of my parents are teachers, and I feel that coaching is teaching. And so I think that there's something genetic there's this attraction to instruction and real passion for watching improvement in people. And so it's just a natural progression. Once I felt enough expertise really in my profession that I could instruct other people, I think it was just a natural thing. Not that I'm an expert in any means. I'm constantly trying to learn. But I really, really enjoy watching improvement and seeing the magic of when a team comes together and the things that a real team can do if they play together and all of this stuff.
After coaching at many different programs, what is the hardest thing that you found about coaching?
Well, the hardest thing is not to fall into the trap that exists for so many high-level athletes that become coaches. And that is, you know, to fall into that trap of saying, I can't understand why you can't do this to your players, you know. As a player, sometimes some things come naturally, you know, and it can be difficult for those to instruct those that doesn't come as naturally to. So really the challenge is to try and teach everybody, to try and get through to everybody, to try and word things in a different way for each player so that it resonates in their mind and that you get the maximum out of everyone, whether they're the most gifted athlete or a little bit less gifted. That's a big challenge.
At UCLA, the level of athlete you're instructing are guys who are the top of their club programs. I mean, you're getting the elite coming here, and all of a sudden they're faced with playing against competition that's as good as they are. There are so many subtleties in the game of water polo, drawing exclusions. How do you maximize the technique to try to get those 6-on-5 opportunities?
Well, you're always working on your technique, and you're always working. This is also something that's very interesting, watching players that were the top of their club program come out and see who really develops at the next level and see who, well, kind of maxed out. And once they get in this elite level, maybe they're not as strong as they were. You know, everyone's arc is different. Some people finish early, other people just keep progressing. So we're always working on technique, drawing exclusions. You know, specifically, we don't specifically work on drawing exclusions, but they come as a result of proper play. You know, proper movements on the outside that create advantageous position that can lead to exclusions, or also in the center position where most of the exclusions occur.
As a player, when did you know that water polo was going to be your path?
I don't know. I started late. I started when I was 14. Now people are starting 7, 8. I mean, there's splash ball for kids who are 4 years old. I just happened to luck out that I lived in a school district that had a strong program. Sunny Hills High School back in the 80s and 70s was very strong, and a very passionate coach who would dedicate his life to the players and the sport. And so I was very lucky. I just started. I always liked the water. I always played team sports. So water, team sport, you know, it worked out. And then to have such a great fundamental skills teacher running, coaching me in my most important development years. I don't know. At some point, I got this fever, you know, for the sport, and it just never went away.
Everyone in the sport is obviously a strong swimmer. Do you recommend to young potential players that they work on their swimming speed, their technique, their strength? What do you think is the most important thing for a youngster to try to develop to become a good water polo player?
The most important thing for the youngsters is to become good at everything. You know, I mean, you can be a great swimmer, but if you don't know the game, then your swimming skills will not be displayed during the game because you'll be a step behind everywhere. That being said, the way the game is now, swimming is such a huge factor people need to be strong swimmers. I mean, you can't have a team of slow swimmers. You know, you can maybe have one or two guys who are a little bit slower, but the way the shot clock is short and the way that this game is geared toward the counterattack now, that Everybody needs to be strong. And if I have any players in my club program that are not good swimmers, that have aspirations to be Division I players or college players, I always tell them that they need to get private stroke lessons, or they need to join the swim team for a season, or you got to be able to swim. You just have to.
U.S. water polo is getting more exposure now than ever before. The championship rounds are always on TV now. And, of course, at UCLA, all of your matches at home are going to be broadcast audio on UCLABruins.com. John Ramey does a great job with play-by-play. Mm-hmm. I fill in once in a while, so hopefully I'll see you out there on the pool deck as well. Do you find that there's a lot more interest amongst youngsters about getting into the sport?
I have noticed an enormous growth in the number of young people playing water polo. The sad thing is that I have yet to see really this growth kind of bubble work itself all the way through to a point where which we start adding more men's water polo programs, to the point at which possibly we start developing a professional league for the players after college so they don't have to go to Europe, so we can continue this development so that the players get into their prime, which is, you know, 27, 28, 29, 30. I'm hoping that's going to be the case. I don't know. It's always a question of money and economics. But currently in Southern California, there are more water polo players than in any country in the world. And so it's fantastic.
It's good to see you in Bruin Blue and Gold, and best wishes for a great career.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for joining us on UCLA Bruin Talk. As we said, the fall sports calendar right around the corner. For Allison Taylor, I'm Dave Marcus. We will see you next week with another great show. Until then, so long from Westwood.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.